He nodded. Smelly salts. Leftovers from my boxing days. They smell too bad to expire. He snapped one of the tiny envelopes under Billy V's nose, and his head jerked back, his instinct to avoid the burning sensation in his mucous membranes foremost. Catching his shoulder, I held Billy upright as he glanced around, stretched his jaw, and then began retching. I grabbed the trash can from under the desk and set it in his lap as he accommodated me by vehemently throwing up into it. I held the can as I pointed for Corbin to get some towels from the bathroom. After a few moments, Kiddo's stomach settled, or he ran out of things to throw up, and I handed him one of the towels Dougherty had brought back, training the patrolman the trash can. You might want to take that outside. I watched as he exited with the wastebasket and gave Kiddo a moment. You know they were going to kill you, right? He took a breath, dry retching this time, and then fell back into the chair. They didn't need you anymore after you did all the polymer fabrication for Nance, and you'd become a liability, which is actually something you're probably used to being. He stared at me. So Nance and his friends are going to try and fly the coop? He finally nodded. He's got connections in Mexico. Oh man, this whole situation has turned to shit. I'd say that's the understatement of the year. The front door opened and Henry entered with Agent Stainbrook, both of them wearing quizzical looks. Corbin closed the door behind them. It's Nance, and he's got his private army bunkered up over near the airport where they've got a jet warming up for a clean getaway. Stainbrook approached and shook his head at the biker. You know, I had my doubts about you, but I didn't think you were this stupid. Kiddo shook his head. You're one of them? The ATF agent slipped his badge from under his shirt and held it out to Billy V so that he could get a better than good look. Yeah, and so is my buddy, Brady Post. Kiddo raised his hands. I had nothing to do with that. Stainbrook's face stiffened. To do with what? I overheard some of them talking while I was hiding out about somebody shooting the main enforcer on the trade train nomads, but it wasn't me that did it. Then who did? I don't know. I don't kill people. Your gun did. He made a face and appeared a little paler through the stylish facial hair and tattoos. What are you talking about? That 40 of yours was the weapon that did the deed, and we got an absolute ballistic match with the slug the sheriff here was able to dig out of your neighbor's yard from the time you attempted to shoot his lawnmower. He glanced at me.
You have got to be fucking kidding.
I stuffed my hands in my pockets.
Nope.
I haven't had that gun in forever. I think Nance had it when we were working on the design for...
He wiped the tears from his face.
It was just for show.
Stainbrook pulled out another chair and slid in close to the former TV star. Then you put on quite a show, my friend. Kiddo hung his head.
Look, this guy comes to me and says he's got this new space-age shit that's stronger than steel, says he's got it patented and everything, but that he's got to keep it under wraps to maintain his competitive edge. He had a shitload of money, and I had debts with the production companies and ex-wives and shit. Then my show gets canceled. When I started helping him, it was all about bikes, but then he started talking about the government and how that's where the real money was, you know, in guns.
I sat on the edge of the desk. Did he also mention it was highly illegal?
Oh, man, it was a business deal, he sobbed. I even came up with the idea of moving the samples in the hidden containers of the gas tanks. I was trying so hard to get him back on track and out of the gun thing.
I don't suppose you're aware of what happened to his previous business associate, who ended up in a dumpster in Scottsdale with no hands and no head? He stared at me. I'm just trying to get a read on where your allegiances lie in all this. Now, you can partner up with the ATF and me, or you can continue to play ball with the guys who are on their way to shooting you in the back of the head and burying you in a ditch beside a hayfield. Choice is yours. His eyes flicked among all of us like a raccoon fresh out of trees.
What do you want to know?
How many men does he have in there?
I really don't know. They kept me in the front with a blanket over my head.
What would you guess?
A half dozen, maybe?
Are they armed?
I don't think so. I mean, they're just going to Mexico.
I let the absurdity of that statement pass.
Do they have supplies? Like what?
I fought the urge to pick him up by his Adam's apple.
Food? Water? I don't think so.
Stainbrook's eyes met with mine.
You're thinking what I'm thinking?
I stood, not liking the option, but knowing it was the most prudent. Bottle him up and just hold him there till the cavalry gets here? He nodded. They'll destroy the evidence, or as much of it as they can, but I don't want this asshole getting away. I think we're all in agreement on that.
There was a disruption at the door as somebody made to come in, but with the Cheyenne Nation blocking it, the chances of that were just about nil. But then the bear stepped to the side and swept the door wide, reached out and grabbed whoever it was and pulled him into the room one-handed. After landing, Eddie the Viking stood there trying to look as if entering this way had been his idea.
Hey!
Corbin, the one who knew him best, seemed to be the person he was talking to. Can I help you, Eddie? We're, kinda busy here.
There's a gang of guys out front, and they saw you carrying Billy in here, and they say they're going to stir some shit up if you don't turn him loose or something.
The Viking shrugged.
I guess they're big fans of the show.
Nutter shook his head and followed him toward the door.
Good grief.
I pointed to the patrolman.
Corbin, go with them.
Right.
He followed, and Henry let them pass, but then held the door open after them, just to give the troublemakers a look at the reinforcements. You could hear voices outside, but after a moment, they died down, the bear keeping his eye on them as he closed the door.
There's probably something else you should know.
We all turned at Kiddo's voice as his head dropped to his chest.
I mean, something kinda important.
What? His head came up slowly.
They've got a hostage.
Who? Kiddo looked toward Stainbrook.
I want immunity. I want total immunity, or I stop talking right now.
Stainbrook stood, spun the chair, and then sat again, laying his thick arms on the back and scooting in close. Let me explain something to you. One of my best men is dead. A guy who has two kids and a loving wife in San Diego is never going to get to see his family again, because you or one of your scumbag friends shot him in the chest. Now, if you don't tell us everything you know right now, I'm going to find one of those really hideous federal prisons and drop you in Gen Pop and let them see how they like that tough guy movie star ass of yours. We all sat there staring at him as the front door opened again, and he watched as Corbin and Nutter strong-armed a handcuffed biker through the bullpen toward the holding cells.
We got your back, Billy V.
Kiddo's head sagged.
Jesus.
The Hollywood biker took a few breaths, stoking his courage, and finally spoke.
Lola.
I glanced at Henry, who was back to leaning against the front door like a sphinx, and it was as if Billy had commented on the weather. He shifted in his seat.
And I guess that's partially my fault.
Henry's voice echoed against the concrete walls like a jackhammer.
Do tell.
Kiddo turned and looked at him, but then evidently felt safer looking at me.
She wanted to meet Nance, and I didn't see any reason why not.
The bear pushed off the wall.
You are sure she is in there?
The reality star nodded.
Yeah, I heard her voice.
The Cheyenne Nation studied him for a moment, then turned to walk back and look out the window. I ventured an opinion. If we get them trapped, there's no way they'll hurt her. The bear glanced at me over his shoulder.
You are sure of that?
I shrugged.
Of course not.
It was then that the radio console on the desk chattered.
Static. Walt, are you there?
Pushing Kiddo aside, I grabbed the desk mic and answered,
Yep, what's up?
Static.
They're loading a cargo container onto a flatbed.
Stainbrook's hand came into view. We need that stuff. I spoke into the mic again. Anything else? I mean, are they loading people or just the samples and equipment?
Static. Just stuff for now, but it's not going to be too much longer, and they're going to be headed for the friendly skies.
I leaned in again. All right, keep me posted. And Vic?
Static.
Yeah?
Keep a lookout for Lola.
There was a pause.
Static.
You're shitting me.
Nope. Over.
I stood and looked around the room for an answer, and not finding one, asked in general,
Anybody got any ideas?
Nutter volunteered from the doorway.
Call Ellsworth Air Force Base and have them shoot the sons of bitches out of the air.
Anybody have anything a little less drastic?
Yes, but just barely.
I turned and could see that Henry was still looking out the window, but was now pointing outside.
I think that there are certain crimes which the law cannot touch, and which therefore, to some extent, justify private revenge.
Ignoring the Sherlock quote, I walked over to where my best friend was standing, peering through the dusty slats of the Venetian blinds in the late afternoon sun at what filled the parking lot. The 15 tons of white, mine-resistant, ambush-protected military juggernaut. The mighty Pequod.
Chapter 16.
You have to admit that there's a certain dramatic irony in driving this thing up Nance's rear end, seeing as how he bought it and all. Rumbling through the cutoff to the golf course, I revved the monster thing into second gear as it effortlessly climbed the hill. Henry was silent as I made small talk with Stainbrook. "So tell me, Eddie the Viking isn't your second agent on scene."
"Eddie the Viking is not my second agent on scene."
"Do you mean that?"
"Yes. I'm relieved. I thought we were in real trouble there for a minute." I rounded the turns that flattened into the parking lot beside the clubhouse where the skeet shoot competition had been what seemed a long time ago. "So Apelu, a.k.a. Big Easy, was Post's confidential informant within the Trey Trey Nomads?" The ATF agent hung on two of the straps, trying to keep himself centered in the back seat so that he could see through the windshield. "Big Easy was the primary, but there are others. We thought of approaching Kiddo, but he seemed like such a loose cannon. We figured a week later he'd be attempting to negotiate another cable reality show." His voice assumed a fake TV announcer tone. "Billy V. Kiddo, ATF.
It could still happen."
I spun the wheel starboard and sent the Pequod down the road past the utility buildings toward the airport.
"So Nance tags the original scientist who came up with the polymer, then works with Taurus, Bodaway's father, then gets rid of him and partners up with Kiddo. That's the way it looks. How did he ever think he could get rid of a celebrity like Billy V and get away with it? I'd say he's desperate. Why try and kill Bodaway? I have no idea. Maybe it just had to do with the daughter. But you can see from the scorecard that when these guys go to kill you, they generally don't miss, especially on a lonesome road at night."
There was a pause. "You really give a shit about this kid?"
I glanced at Henry and sighed. "I do. That's the case that I'm working on."
"Is that why you're driving an armored military vehicle through a golf course right now?"
"Ancillary. Nance and his plastic guns are your problem, but if I can work my case by helping you with yours, so be it. The daughter, Chloe. She says she found him on the side of the road?" I shrugged. "Maybe she did. Do we have any idea where she is?"
I glanced back at him.
"I was hoping you did."
He shook his head.
"Not on our radar, but I'm sure we can find out. There were a lot of cell phone calls going back and forth between her and Bodaway. Maybe she was in on it. A beautiful girl, a handsome boy. Maybe they're just a thing."
The ATF agent paused. "I never thought of that." I pulled the MRAP around the corner and parked beside the oriental poppy-colored Challenger.
"Agent, you've got to get out more."
Vic was standing on the hillside at the top of the berm, pretty much eye level with us as I opened the door of the Pequod and gestured like the lovely Carol Merrill. She put her hands on both sides of her face in mock enthusiasm and spoke in a voice loud enough to be heard over the diesel engine.
"Oh, my, the fleet's in."
I smiled at our conveyance. "I think we've got enough fuel to get the job done and make it back to a gas station. Maybe." She dropped her hands and looked at me.
"Where's Nutter and Doherty?"
"Babysitting Dog and waiting for the squad of highway patrolmen that are on their way."
"So our job is to—"
"Bottle them up till reinforcements arrive." I climbed out and watched as she negotiated her way down the embankment.
"Have they finished loading the stuff?"
She swung the binoculars on her neck.
"They're finishing up now, but I'm thinking that they'll likely go back to the bunker before finally heading out.
I don't think the air crew are armed, but we've got to keep that thing on the ground."
"Split up?"
"Yep, you can take Stainbrook and Henry and I will park the Pequod and blockade the bunker gate. We'll see what their plastic guns can do against it."
"What are you going to do about Lola?"
"What would they gain by hurting her?"
"A threat. She's the only ticket they've got to get out of here.
They kill her and they go nowhere." She punched my arm and moved toward the Dodge as the ATF agent joined her on the other side.
"That's your negotiation stance?"
I threw a thumb back at Henry, still seated in the passenger seat of the Pequod.
"Got it from the Cheyenne."
She rolled her eyes and slipped inside, starting the Challenger with a subdued rumble. Stainbrook looked back at me with the door handle in his hand, more than a little concerned.
"Does she know how to drive this thing?"
The flatbed was making the return trip to the bunker, and fortunately the occupants weren't paying any attention to the road on the hill leading back into town. I'd let Vic advance 100 yards ahead of me. I figured when she made her move, I'd make mine, only slower. Much slower.
I glanced at Henry, who sat there studying the road ahead, and bouncing in his palm the foregrip of the Sig Sauer machine pistol we'd confiscated from Nance's dead gunman. How you doing?
I am not sure.
Nodding my head, my eyes followed his to where Vic had inched forward a few feet, probably for a better vantage point. I can tell. Mixed feelings?
You could call it that.
It's not important what I call it. I leaned back in my seat. You're sure you still don't have any feeling for Lola? He turned and looked at me. Boat away. His eyes went back to the windshield, and I watched as his breathing slowed.
He has not had many advantages in this life.
No, he hasn't. And unfortunately, I don't think he's going to be getting any time soon. I waited before saying the rest. I know this is a case of the pot calling the kettle black. But you can't do everything for everybody, Henry.
No. But the least I can do is keep his mother from dying.
I glanced around at the plethora of military overkill. Hey, it was your idea to bring this behemoth to the party. You got something else in mind now? He leaned forward, trying to get a better look at the bunker.
If you roll up to the front with this, that should provide enough of a distraction to allow me to come in from the back.
If there is a back. There aren't any windows, so I'm not so sure there's a door other than the one in front.
What have we got to lose? You are going to need someone outside the vehicle, short of driving through this structure, which you cannot do without imperiling Lola.
Shock and awe, huh? He finally smiled.
You be the awe, and I will provide the shock.
He pulled the handle and climbed out, slinging the machine pistol over his shoulder and looking all the world like some high plains merce.
I will need 10 minutes.
I pointed toward the muscle car. Tell Bo and Luke Duke up ahead of us there. As he started to close the door, I asked, how long were you going to sit there before telling me what you were thinking? The smile lingered, and he quoted me some more Arthur Conan Doyle.
When I glanced again, his face had resumed that Red Indian composure which had made so many regard him as a machine rather than a man.
I took out my Colt and lodged it in the seat he'd been occupying up to now. Get out of here before I shoot you myself. The door closed, and it was gone into the twilight of early evening, like an afterthought. 10 minutes can be a long time, and this was one of those instances. I stuffed my pocket watch back into my jeans and cracked the door open, the windows being inoperable as Vic walked up alongside, stepping onto the running board of the Pequod. It's been 9.5 minutes. She glanced down the road. They're loading up smaller items for the final run, so I think it's now or never.
Okay, you guys head over to the airport and shut it down. I don't even want that thing capable of flight.
Take the keys?
I don't know if jets have keys.
We'll steal the distributor cap.
I don't know if they have those either.
Fucking whatever, we'll stop it, okay?
If it seems secure, you can come over and help me.
Deal.
Don't shoot anybody unless you have to.
She made a face, looking at my ride. And don't you run over anybody unless you have to. She then bit my arm and was gone. More like a forethought. As I'd anticipated, she blasted the Dodge down the hill like an internally combusted luge sled, sliding through the S-curve and skidding onto the municipal airport tarmac next to the Citation jet. My approach was a bit slower, but carried a great deal more majesty, kind of like a house on wheels. Approaching an astonishing 20 miles an hour, I wheeled the MRAP into the cutoff leading up the Box Canyon to the bunker. There were 5 men standing by the flatbed and a Suburban near the entrance, and they all turned to watch as I approached. I was wishing that Nutter had sprung for the sirens, but figured the PA system would have to suffice. Lodging the oversized vehicle in the 14-foot opening of the closed gate, I parked in close enough so that the only thing that could possibly pass on either side would be a man on foot. I plucked the mic from the dash, flipped the toggle switch overhead, and heard my voice echo off the surrounding rock walls.
Howdy!
They didn't move. So far, the all thing was working pretty well.
This is Sheriff Walt Longmire, and I hate to ruin your day, but you're all under arrest.
They still didn't move, and I started thinking it was maybe too much shock. This particular thought was belayed by their next action, which was to draw their collective weapons and begin pointing them at me. My next thought was to wonder whether Chief Nutter had opted for the bulletproof glass option. I decided to bluff my way in and keyed the mic.
I wouldn't make a bad situation worse by doing that. We've shut down your escape plane over at the airport, and there are about 100 Wyoming peace officers converging on this area as we speak.
I watched as they glanced around, but they didn't seem awed or shocked anymore.
Honest.
I'm not sure who fired first, or if it was even one of them, but at the report of the gunshot, they jumped, and one of them fired a round into the windshield of the MRAP, spidering the bulletproof glass. As a reflex, I shied against the door as another volley cracked the rest of the screen, but it held. Oh, Nutter, you magnificent bastard. Figuring there wasn't much else for it, I slipped my foot from the brake and stomped on the gas. Until the thing came to a stop, I would just duck between the seats along for the ride. There was a burst of noise as the giant wheels of the Pequod rammed into the closest truck and began climbing up its rear. There was more noise and a lot of yelling, which I hoped meant that the shooters were running for their lives, which is what I would have been doing. The Pequod kind of settled out as it ran over the pickup, but then I felt another lurch as it slammed into the flatbed that had ferried the supplies to the airport. I felt its tires give way and could hear the entire body being crushed under the weight of the 15-ton military vehicle. At least Nutter hadn't put the Pequod on a diet. The big truck lurched and grunted and, using the two civilian vehicles as traction, began grinding into the reinforced Quonset hut, taking the buttressed concrete front with it. The thing kept going, and I started getting the feeling that I should let up or I would be likely to run right over the building and flatten whoever might happen to be inside, including Henry, most likely Lola, and Nance. Letting up on the accelerator, I felt the Pequod reluctantly lose speed, and it felt like it might have grounded its front suspension into the collapsed wall. It settled like a whale in a deep surf. Carefully lifting my head, I glanced around but couldn't see much on account of the amazing amount of dust in the air. As it abated in the slight breeze, I could see that my surmise had been pretty much on target. The gunmen were on the surrounding hillsides, running for the tree line, and I didn't blame them. The radio rattled on the dash of the big truck. Static. Stainbrook and I heard shots. Are you all right? I gripped and keyed the mic. Couldn't be better. Static. What happened? They threw a few shots at me, so I ran over two of their trucks and into their building. Static. Where are the shooters? Scattered hither and yon. Static. Did you get Nance? Not yet, but I'm working on it. So is Henry. No one seemed to be interested in turning and throwing a potshot at me, so I pulled the handle and opened the MRAP's unencumbered driver's door. Stepping out under the concrete rubble that had been the front wall of the bunker, I still held the mic. What's the status on the plane? Static. Grounded. There was one tough guy, but I popped him in the nose with the butt of my Glock, and things calmed down. I keyed the mic again. Well, keep them there, and I'll ring in when we get the rest. I let go of the mic and watched as it launched back into the cab and ricocheted off the steering wheel. I glanced back at the two flattened vehicles behind me. Wow, that worked. Slipping my Colt from my holster, I carefully picked my way down the rubble and, peering under the lip of the Quonset hut into the darkness of the very long building, tried to figure out how I was going to get in. Whatever door had been at the front of the structure was now buried, so crabbing along the side and using the running boards as a railing, I went around the back of the Pequod and spotted a portion of the concrete wall that had collapsed to the inside. Giving one more glance to the surrounding area, I could see that Nance's rental army had gotten to the rock walls, but I was pretty sure they wouldn't get much farther with the noose tightening. Scrambling down the rubble, I raised a hand to steady myself on the Quonset's arced metal ridge and swung into what must have been a waiting room or a reception area. Fortunately, there were no bodies, and I was feeling relatively sure that my impromptu frontal assault hadn't cost any lives. I listened, but there didn't appear to be any noise coming from within. Stepping down onto the concrete floor, I could see a doorway to my left that must have led further inside, but with the interior wall having shifted, the jamb looked a little crooked, and when I tried the knob, it wouldn't budge. Stepping back, I put a size 13 warrant into use, and the cheap, hollow-core door split in two. Leading with the Colt, I stepped inside. There were a few sparks from the fractured overhead lighting, but other than that, not much illumination. It was definitely a manufacturing setup, and a lot of the equipment was still here,
obviously too heavy to be loaded on the jet. Working my way down the single aisle into the darkness, I thought about what a great target I must be presenting, backlit from behind. I figured that Henry must have found them and either had the situation in hand or was involved in some sort of standoff. Either way, I figured it was okay to yell, "Henry!" There was some movement in the shadows, about 30 yards away, and I raised the barrel of the .45, taking aim. "Henry!"
"Stop yelling. It is undignified."
I made out his familiar shape as he approached with the machine pistol at his shoulder.
"Where were you?"
He glanced past me at the wreckage.
"Running in the other direction because a madman drove a truck into the building."
"See anybody?"
He turned and started back. "Only a lowly gunsel whom I have tied to a chair."
"You only got one?"
"Where are yours?"
"Running for the Black Hills." I caught up with him. "Does he know where Nance and Lola are?
I was about to ask him when you attempted your drive-through."
True to the bear's word, there was a middle-aged individual sitting in an office chair, tied with what looked to be an extension cord. I gestured toward him. "Hey, Phil." He was sweating profusely.